I want to bring on to the line Robert Kyle, who is the head of digital services for the Wellcome Library at the Wellcome Trust. He's talking to us today from his office in the UK. Robert, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Chris. It's great to be invited to join your panel this afternoon. I'm looking forward to an interesting discussion.
Well, indeed, and we're very happy to have you address our audience, as we say, of several hundred from around the world, and we have some contact information there for Robert. He is a tweeter as well, at Robert Kiley. The Wellcome Trust has their own account, and you can reach him there at that address, rkiley@wellcome.ac.uk. Well, Robert, you want to tell us, I'm sure, about the Wellcome Trust policy that I kind of previewed earlier, and essentially it's there in bullet form. Tell us more.
Okay, well, really for quite some time now, since back in 2005, so we're old hands at this, the Wellcome Trust developed a policy which was beautifully simple, and I think is still simple, in as much as if a researcher comes to the Wellcome Trust looking for funding and they're successful, we make a simple requirement that any research which arises from our research funding has to be made open access, ideally as soon as possible, and in any event within 6 months of publication.
Well, indeed, and you mentioned just how far back this goes. You specified 2005, a date that Copyright Clearance Center has been involved in these kinds of activities as well. And what you've been seeing over time is a growing compliance with all this, and of course that's something that you've been urging on people voluntarily and now are requiring it. So this chart here shows the growth of these kinds of papers and that growth of compliance since 2007.
Yeah, that's correct. So if you look at if you really focus on the orange line, the top line, that just shows month on month we do a snapshot of research which is attributed to the trust in a given month, say June 2012 or whatever, and how many articles, typically about 500 articles each month, and then how many of those articles are freely available from PubMed Central and Europe PubMed Central. And though that trend, you know, he's going in the right direction, and it looks reasonably healthy. I remember showing it about a year ago to our director here, Sir Mark Wolpert, and he said, well, it looks okay, but why isn't it 100%? So really, the work we've been doing over the last sort of 6 to 9 months is an attempt to get that compliance up to nearer 100% rather than the sort of 60-70% where it currently languishes.
Right. I mean, there has been a great deal of improvement, but still there is more room for improvement there. And to that point, the Wellcome Trust has been strengthening its policy, to put it mildly. But in fact, you are now in a position to want to sanction those who do not comply.
Exactly. So it's always sort of been, it's always been a mandate, but we haven't really been particularly clear on the consequences of not complying. So what we've done now is just spell out these three hopefully reasonably clear sanctions of what happens if you don't comply. So initially, the first sanction really affects institutions, in as much as when a researcher submits their end of grant report, typically that used to in itself just trigger the final payment of the grant. What we now do is the researcher says, you know, thanks for the money, this is what I've done, and these are the outputs. If any of those outputs are the research articles are not in our repository, then we withhold the final payment, the final 10% of the grant, until those papers have been put into our repository. And that, I say, will affect, I think, the institution more than the researcher, because the researcher has typically finished their research. The other two are really designed specifically at the researcher. So the second one is when a researcher comes back to us to say, I've done some great work, but I want to do some even more great work. As part of that review process, we will look to see whether the articles which they've already published under that grant are open access. And if they're not, say that they will need to be made open access before that grant is activated. And just generally speaking, there is sort of a process whereby if an applicant submitted a proposal and they were previously Wellcome Trust funded, if their papers, again, weren't open access, then we wouldn't specifically include those papers in the when we sent the application out to peer review. So really what we're trying to do here is really change behavior to say that open access isn't an option, isn't something you can tack on to the end. It's a key part of accepting Wellcome Trust funding. And we genuinely believe that it's not only good for the researcher in as much as they can find other pieces of research and so forth, we think it's good for science and society. So we generally, we passionately believe in open access. And if we need to sort of use a few sticks here to encourage our researchers to comply, then that's what we're doing.
Well, indeed, fair enough. And the kind of compliance that you're speaking about involves a very certain kind of Creative Commons license, the CC BY license. And perhaps for those in the audience who aren't familiar with that, you can tell us exactly what that's about.
So the Creative Commons Attribution License is one of the sort of liberal licenses you can attach to a piece of research or attach to anything. And what this enables anyone to do is basically reuse that work in any way they deem appropriate, subject to proper attribution. So what we're simply saying is that when we pay an article processing fee, and whether that's to a publisher like PLOS, when everything's open access, or to a hybrid publisher like Wiley or Elsevier, then when we make that payment, we really expect that to cover all costs, including any downstream revenue a publisher may like to earn from that. And the key thing is that paper can then be used by anyone and everyone. So some very obvious examples may be that someone wants to take an article and translate it. That should be possible. Under CC BY, that is permissible. Perhaps someone wants to take an article and repost it on another website. So let's assume we'd funded some research into, say vaccination. Vaccination is a big topic in the UK again at the moment. It might be more appropriate, or might be as appropriate, for that article not only to be in PubMed Central and so forth, where the research community goes, but perhaps on a service like Mumsnet, where mums just had babies, will learn about the importance of vaccination. And again, if an article isn't licensed with CC BY, if it has a license such as like a non-commercial clause to it, it makes that reposting of content very difficult. So we believe that the real benefits of open access will only really be enjoyed when the whole community can access this content without any fear of restriction, without any fear of a takedown notice from a publisher or threats or anything like that. Just say, you use this. And really, for the researcher, the main currency, certainly in the life sciences, the main currency they're interested in is attribution. And the CC BY, the CC BY license guarantees attribution.
Well, indeed. And Robert, for a clarification point, the relationship here of funder, author, and publisher is obviously very important. Who has the responsibility for posting the CC BY license then?
So we expect, to be clear again, this requirement only applies if an article processing fee has been charged. So in that case, because the researcher has like an agreement with publisher X to deposit that article in PubMed Central, that's part of the agreement, and when an APC is levied, we expect the publisher to attach that CC BY license directly to that article. And I should say that we've been working with the publishing community for well over 6 months on this requirement, and it's fair to say that certainly all the large publishers and most of the major ones, Wellcome Trust and Research Council's funded authors use, now have a policy which allows their papers to be published under a CC BY license.
Indeed. And again, all of these are requirements that the Wellcome Trust has made a part of its policies for a number of years, but is really mandating compliance as of today and since last month.
We are speaking to be clear, right now, the CC BY requirement, that is new from April. Before that, we were less specific. We wanted licenses which allowed reuse, but we didn't specify what license it should be. We now explicitly say it must be CC BY.
Thank you for that clarification. We are speaking with Robert Kiley, the head of digital services at the Wellcome Library at the Wellcome Trust. My name is Chris Keneally for Copyright Clearance Center. And at this point, we want to turn to you, the members of our audience today, the audience joining us from the UK, from the US, and around the world. We've got some questions for you that we'd like to get your responses to and you'll be able to see the poll question appear on your screen, and you'll get to vote in these questions. And so let's start with our first question, which is, are funders right to insist, it's an appropriate one for our last slide, are funders right to insist on a CC BY license when they are subsidizing APC funds? The three options there are yes, no, and not sure. We would ask you to vote as quickly as you can. We'll try to keep this moving along here. We want to get a sense of the temperature of the room. I believe, Robert, you can see the results coming in there. The question again is, are funders, such as the Wellcome Trust and Robert Kiley's organization, right to insist on a CC BY license? Got about 15 seconds left for you to share your views with us, and we'll display the poll results in just a moment. And here we go. You get your votes in now. So, can we display those poll results for our audience? Can they see that on the screen? I believe they can. The poll shows a pretty evenly divided group from those who have responded to us there. Is that a sense you have, Robert? I wouldn't want to call it indifference, but a sort of, equanimous view of this whole thing. People are not up in arms, and neither are they wildly excited about this.
Unfortunately, I can't actually see the results, so just give me...
What we have here is a fairly evenly divided, actually almost exactly divided room of those who are answering yes, no, and not sure to that question about the right to insist on a CC BY license.
Yes, well, I mean, there are various... I suppose that's not... that's surprising. I think our view is that we believe that that there is real public good to be gained by making sure this content can be used, and therefore we feel that ultimately trumps anything else. But it's interesting to see the other views, yes.
Indeed. Well, let's ask one more question about the CC BY license. And this is regarding a choice between authors and funders. If a funder requires CC BY, but an author wants to use another Creative Commons license, and there are a variety of them, and Robert alluded briefly to one or two, I believe, the CC BY, NC, non-commercial, and so forth, whose rights should prevail? It's a question about whose rights should prevail. Should it be the funder or the author? Let us know what you think. We have a few moments to get your input for this poll. And indeed, the question again, if a funder requires CC BY, but an author wants to use another type of Creative Commons license, whose rights should prevail, the funder or the author? Just a few seconds left for you to give us your input on that, please. And we do have the final results here, and again, we may be having an issue with displaying those results for people, but I can tell you that it's about 2-1, Robert Kiley and everybody attending, it's about 2-1 voting in favor of the author whose rights should prevail. What do you think about that result, Robert? Any comment on that?
Well, I suppose I don't know who's in the audience.
That's right. There may well be a lot of authors who voted there. That's
yeah.
Right.
I mean, what I would say is, I suppose, two things. One, they're already, certainly in the fields we work in the STEM subjects, you know, there are a massive number of articles already published under CC BY, which seems to suggest to me that many authors are reasonably comfortable with that. Secondly, in terms of, you know, who's right, whether the funder should trump a author, it really comes down to what we think the public good are. So if we're providing funding to you as an author, fine, you obviously have certain rights and so forth, but ultimately I think we believe that the public good argument would trump an individual's requirement. I'd be interested to know why an author wouldn't want their work to be made under this license, really.
Well, a question for another time then, perhaps. Well, let's move along, because one of the points that I know you want to stress is just the way that there's been a great deal of momentum behind this, particularly recently. You referred to there a kind of academic spring that has come to the scholarly publishing world.
Yes, I mean, as I said, we've been doing open access, you know, for what, 7-8 years or so. But it's really in the last sort of 12-15 months that I believe open access has become really mainstream. And particularly in the UK, we now have the government policy requiring open access, which I think is a huge development. And only, in fact, only yesterday, I mean, it's quite astonishing, really. David Willetts, who's the Minister for Universities and Science in the UK, he was speaking in the committee in the Houses of Parliament, where you have a Minister of State arguing passionately for gold versus green and understanding concepts like CC BY license and so forth. And it's almost astonishing that someone in government really understands the nuances of this debate on one level. But secondly, it's really pleasing to hear that, you know, the government really recognise the value of trying to get the research which they fund through our taxpayers, through our taxes, to make that open access. So I think we've seen a real sea change in the last 12, 15 months.
Well, indeed. And, you know, what's astonishing to me from the perspective of the United States here is just how central this is to the public debate in the UK. I mean, there you've got The Guardian front page, along with Yoko Ono, is the headline about open access. So really, in the UK, this is very much front page news.
Absolutely, yeah.
Indeed. Now, one thing we do want to show people is a trend toward all this, kind of sort of substantiate the point that you're making, that we are seeing a sea change in scholarly publishing. PLOS One, which is the Public Library of Science, that's now the biggest journal on the planet, and it is a pure play open access publication.
Yes, and the growth figures from PLOS One is nothing short of staggering. As you can see on the slide, almost 25,000 articles published in 2012, and I believe the projection for 2013 is even for a greater number. And on the assumption that imitation is the sincerest form of flattery or open access, virtually every publisher on the planet is rushing to try and develop an equivalent journal to PLOS One. So all of the major publishers now have got some sort of open access journal, trying to publish high volumes, not trying to assess whether it's a sexy article, whether or not just simply the research, the conclusions it's reached are based on the evidence presented.
Well, indeed, and I think the point you've made, and you referred to the hybrid OA publications, I guess what we ought to sort of point out to everybody in the audience is that there is a one-size-fits-all when it comes to OA.
Absolutely, yes. There's a whole raft of different models out there for the pure open access journals. And this slide really here just shows from a really low base in the year 2000, where it was estimated that about 800 articles were published under a gold model, through to the end of 2011, where in 2011 itself, 136,000 articles were published under a gold open access author pays model. So I think the point here really is that not only are there more opportunities for researchers to publish open access, but more importantly, researchers are actually taking those opportunities and either publishing, I say, in pure open access journals or in hybrid journals.
Indeed. And throughout all this, as that progress has been made in open access, we're seeing, you know, challenges in compliance. You pointed out those. And the need, as at least identified in the recent Research Information Network report, for the role of intermediaries to sort of ease the friction on all of this. Tell us about that.
Yeah, well, I think we've known for a long time that, and there was a big EU-funded study called the SOAP study, which really looks at that researchers' attitudes to open access. And the headlines from that study was, generally speaking, researchers are in favor of open access, but they have two problems. One is they might not have funding, but even if they do have funding, there's this sort of, as you say, there's some friction and the bureaucracy of how you actually make an article process, how you actually pay that article processing charge. And I think this is clear evidence of how mature the market is now becoming, because you have players like CCC, but also you have competitors like Open Access Key, you have EBSCO, other players coming to the market who are trying to plug this gap to make the actual payment of an article processing charge as painless and as transparent as possible.
Right. Well, we'll hear more about that in just a moment, but sort of to conclude your portion of this presentation, Robert Kiley, and we'll have opportunity for questions from the audience. We ask you to use the chat box in the lower right corner of your screen to let us know what's on your mind and what kind of questions you have for Robert Kiley. But Robert, sort of wrap things up for us. What's the direction you expect things to go in the next 12 months or so?
Okay, well, I just start off by, I haven't said too much about the actual cost of open access publishing. Just suffice to say, the Wellcome Trust really since 2005 has always believed and continues to believe that dissemination costs are research costs. So just as we provide funding for centrifuges, for mice, or whatever it is, we believe that you need to provide funding for the dissemination of that. And the analysis we've done shows that even in fairly worst-case scenarios, if everything Wellcome Trust was funded was made open access, and we use average APC charges we currently see, it would represent around 1.5% of our research spend. So though that is a real amount of money, and it means we can't spend 1.5% of research on finding a cure for malaria or whatever, we believe that ensuring that everything is open access is a cost worth paying. I think we're clearly seeing that the momentum for open access, I would argue, is unstoppable. I think the UK is leading this, but it's pleasing to see the developments in the US. I see the National Academies were doing something yesterday. In Europe, we're seeing similar moves. So I think, you know, the move to open access is pretty unstoppable. In the UK, there is a lot of debate at the moment about whether or not we're going to end up paying twice as we pay for open access publishing. No, UK may be a first mover in this. Gold is not just a UK phenomenon. If you look at, for example, the research which is published in journals like PLOS, you will see that funders in the US, funders in Germany, and funders in China pay more than funders in the UK. So I think it's a worldwide phenomenon. And I think one of the things we're really keen to ensure is that article processing charge models remain fair and transparent. One thing I would hate to see is a lurch from big deal subscriptions to big deal APCs where no one really knows what it costs and we start bringing inefficiencies into the system. So I think, in summary, I think open access is unstoppable. I believe we're going to see much more of a move to the author pays model. And I think as part of that, we need to ensure that article processing charges are easy to administer, but the cost becomes cost remains fair and very transparent.
Well, thank you for a comprehensive look at this movement towards open access as seen from the funder's perspective. We've been hearing just now from Robert Kiley, who is the head of digital services for Wellcome Library at the Wellcome Trust.